don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The Streets Don't Love You Back. I gotta do right before they
call me home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is April 18th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have our guest, Ms. Linda Scarpa. Linda grew up in a loving family. She had loving parents. As time went on, she found out that her family had a few secrets. And her father, she found out, was a capo in the Colombo crime family and is also known as the Grim Reaper. We're going to hear Linda's story tonight. And just to let you know, Linda's also done an episode on I Married a Mobster. So the story about her and her father and her mother are on episode 6 of I Married a Mobster. Before we get to Linda and her story, let me introduce my co-host, Boyd, to the show.
Yes, I want to just thank all our viewers for tuning in every Wednesday night on the show. And we would like to just thank Ms. Linda Scarpa for coming on the show to spread her message to help others against this lifestyle that they so kindly think is a cool lifestyle. But she here to tell you that that is not a cool lifestyle. That is a lifestyle of definitely a lot of agony, a lot of headache, a lot of misunderstanding, and a lot of murder that goes on in that lifestyle, and your own kind will kill you. So she's here to let you know all that tonight. And without further ado, we'll pass the mic over to Ms. Linda, and she will formally introduce herself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Linda Scarpa. Happy to join the show. And like Rob said and Lucinda, I would like everyone to realize that the life that I grew up in basically destroyed everything that I love, and you know, I pay the price for that every day. So it's not a good life to be in, and nothing good comes out of it. It's just pain and sorrow, and you know, I live with a lot of pain, and I'm missing my brother, and I lost my father and my brother within 10 months apart. My brother was shot in the head twice and murdered in the streets of Brooklyn. So the show has a lot of meaning to me with the name The Streets Don't Love You Back, because it has true meaning. The streets don't love you back. The streets are not always a good place to be in. And I'm happy to be here with them tonight.
Thank you, Linda. Let's go back to the beginning a little bit and tell us, you know, growing up as a young child, what you remember. And did your life seem kind of normal growing up as a kid? Or when did you start suspecting that things were not like everybody else? Or maybe in your world it was like everybody else. Maybe you can explain that.
Well, from a young age, I mean, I really did, at a very young age, I didn't really realize that my life was that much different. I knew that my father seemed different than other fathers, but I really didn't understand what that meant. He acted different and dressed different than my, you know, friends' fathers, but I really didn't understand it at the time. I was really too young. But as I started to get older and became more, you know, intuitive as to what type of person he was and what type of people his friends were, you know, they acted different, they spoke different, they dressed different, they just had a different way about them. And I started to realize that they were not just typical guys in the street, you know, guys, not typical working guys. They were street guys.
Right. And what was your childhood like? You grew up with your brother and your mother and your father.
Yeah, at a young age, we had a normal life. My mother and father they sent us to Catholic schools, and they always tried to teach us the right way at a young age, but somewhere along the way, they lost track of that, because when you're involved in that type of a lifestyle, you kind of lose track of the right way. I think the streets and the gangs, whether it be gangs, street gangs or mafia gangs or mafia life, it sucks you in, and you lose track of what's real and what's important in your life, and your family. You know, your family always comes first, but they also have their mafia family, and you know, unfortunately, those people come first too. So it's kind of hard for them to differentiate who should come first, because if they don't take the side of the mafia, then they're gonna have a problem. But when it came to my father, he was a different type of. He got his name, the Grim Reaper, because he really didn't care about what anybody else said. He made up his own rules, and he didn't really listen to anybody that was above him. He kind of just did what he wanted. So he wasn't worried about paying the price, because he felt that he would get them before they got him.
And he didn't hesitate to grab his gun and go after anybody that did your family wrong. Is that correct?
Well, he didn't hesitate, no. But I never really saw that side of him until they tried to kill him in front of me. They tried to kill him on my block when he was leaving our home, and I had left the home at the same time as him with my son, who was just a baby. And they had this whole hit planned, and they didn't care that I was there, and they were going to kill him in front of me. And I had five bullet holes in my car, and you know, the mafia's code is not to involve families, and they broke the code that day. They didn't care that I was there, and I could have gotten killed that day, including my son.
Right.
So yeah, once that happened, that's when I saw my father go into full motion of being a full-fledged killer. He was out for revenge, and he was going to make sure that everybody involved was going to pay.
Right, and you say from that day on is when you, like you said, I mean, he just turned, and he was going to go and get whoever did that.
Yeah.
That was not the same night that your brother and his friend were involved. That was months down the road.
That was a different incident. When they tried to kill him in front of me, that's when he just went out on a killing spree, and he wanted to get people. He just wanted to kill anybody that was involved in that incident for doing that in front of me.
Wow.
And
you and the baby are lucky that you didn't get any shots. That was a lot of shots going back and forth.
Yeah, there was around seven guys in black outfits and crazy guns shooting at my father. The streets were blocked off. They had this whole hit planned, and they weren't going to let it go just because I was there. So they didn't care. If I would have got killed, it wouldn't have mattered to them.
Well, but everybody that was with your father died that day, but your father survived it?
No, nobody died that day. Miraculously, no one died. What happened was, I blocked the van with the shooters in it. So when I blocked, there was my father's car, my car, and the van. So because I blocked the van, they had to get out now and shoot. Whereas if I wasn't there, they would have had a clear shot. So that's why no one was hit in my father's car. I think that when they had to get out and start shooting, they got scared because they really were shooting at Greg Scarpa. And, you know, that was a scary thing, I think, for them. I don't think in their right minds they would have attempted that if I wasn't there.
Was it people in the Colombo crime family that did that, or was it a different mafia family or different hit?
It actually was the same family. It was the same family fighting within each other, and they went against each other in the same family. They took different sides.
Wow.
So, you know, even though you're in the same family, okay, they were in the Colombo family, you know, they had differences, and they went into two different fractions of the family and went to war with each other. So they had no loyalty to their family and tried to kill each other. So it's disgusting.
Talk about that a little bit more, Linda, because we talk to the kids too, and that's the same with the different gangs and stuff out here. You know, the kids get into it, they think that that's their family, and they think that nobody's going to hurt them, that they're going to back them up no matter what they do. And in fact, you know, you can be in the same gang, and just like you said, there's different factions, different sets. A lot of them don't even like each other, and, you know, you turn your back 1 minute, and your homeboy or your buddy, it shoots you.
Exactly, that's what they do. And, you know, even as far as the mafia goes, it goes as high up as that. You know, look at them. They turned on each other. So, you know, a street-level gang, I mean, they're pretty powerful too. So if someone's ahead of a gang and they don't like something that someone else may have said or something that someone else may have did, or maybe someone else is making more money than they are, you know, they easily can rub them out. They just kill them like it's nothing. They don't care. Their life is meaningless to them. Their family's feelings are meaningless to them. They don't care about their mothers, their brothers, their sisters. They don't care about the pain that family is going to have to endure for the rest of their life because of them pulling a trigger, because they don't like someone, or because they don't like something that person did. So there is no loyalty in the families, in the gangs, in the streets, in the mafia. There is no loyalty.
There's no loyalty. And you're hearing that from somebody that grew up in the family crime life. Let the viewers or the listeners know a little bit about how your dad got into the mafia and what actually is a capo in the Colombo family.
Well, my father got involved in the mafia from a young age, and he just was, you know, growing up in the streets, and he just was liked by some mafia guys, and they pulled him in. And my father was growing up poor. He didn't want to be poor, so, you know, money's the root of all evil, and he wanted to have a better life for his mother. He didn't want his mother to have to struggle. So he went into that life for money, and that's basically how he got started. And he was a likable guy because he showed these guys that he had power and strength and that people feared him. So that's what it was all about. Being a capo, I mean, it's just another title. I think it's all really meaningless. To me, it's meaningless. I think all these titles mean nothing because you could be the head of a family. I mean, look at Paul Castellano. He was the boss. Did it matter?
Mm-hmm.
They killed him.
Right.
they killed him like he was nothing.
Right, exactly. Out on the streets and in the middle in front of everybody.
So captain, capo, boss, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, title. You know, the title means nothing, really.
Tell us
what matters is, I think what matters is who's holding the gun at that specific moment and who's got a gripe with you.
That's for sure. That's the bottom line. Who's got the power and control at that moment.
Right. The person with the gun's got the power, and if they got a problem with you, it's over for you. And that goes in any level of street crime.
Exactly. And tell us a little bit about, as a teenager, what it was like growing up having him as your father. Did you have trouble having friends or keeping friends or having friends over?
I had a lot of problems keeping friends because if, you know, as a teenager, you know, you're trying different things, you're going out, you're, you know, maybe having a drink or just, you know, doing kid things. It's just normal growing up. And if I did something wrong and I was hanging out with someone, not only did I get in trouble, but the person I was with caught a beating. People didn't really want to hang out with me. You know, people were getting beatings. People were getting beatings left and right. And little by little, I was losing friends. As far as girls were concerned, I didn't really have too many girlfriends because, you know, growing up, my father, he gave me a lot of, you know, there were perks being his daughter. I mean, I had a lot, but I didn't really want it, I'll be honest with you, because having all of these material things, the nice cars and the jewelry and the nice clothes and, you know, everything else I had was making me different than a lot of the other girls, and they didn't want to hang out with me. They were treating me like I was an outcast, and I grew up having a complex. Like, I felt like I didn't know that was the reason why people didn't like me. I thought that maybe there was something wrong with me. So, but my father explained to me that he felt that it was because they were jealous, but I didn't want people to be jealous. I just wanted to be a regular girl. I wasn't that type of person to flaunt or to say I have more or I have a nice car or I have nice clothes. I didn't care about that, you know. I was a regular sneakers and sweatpants girl. I didn't want to have all this stuff. It didn't matter to me. I just wanted to have friends, family. You know, those are the things that were important to me and still are. And even till this day, I'm pretty much a loner. You know, I don't really hang out with a lot of people. You know, I speak to some old friends that I've had, you know, I've had maybe through high school, but I really don't go out or socialize that much, maybe just through the internet, but It's been very hard for me, you know, and it's a lonely life. It really is. It's a lonely life.
Definitely. Now, you still have your mother, and you're close with your mother.
Yeah. Say that again?
Tell us how your mother's doing.
Well, my mother belongs to a group of called Parents of Murdered Children. She pretty much lives on that site. She wakes up in the morning to her coffee and her computer and stays on that computer all day. She tries to support as many people as she can. I think that's her own support by helping other people, but I think that's what's kept her going because my brother was really close to her and she's been having a really hard time living without him, and I think that's how she keeps him alive. But, you know, a lot of people feel that, And a lot of people will judge and say, well, you know, you don't have the right to, you don't have the right to grieve. You don't have the right to feel that pain. Look at what your father did. Look at what your husband did. You know, so what if your brother died? So what if he got killed? You know, I get that a lot. And I'm sure my mother does too. And
right.
it's really not our fault. I don't think anyone deserves to die.
It's not your fault or your mother's fault what your father did, and you have every right in this world to grieve for your brother or your son. You know, the one that was murdered. You have every right to grieve. I mean, you have every right to grieve that you lost your father. You loved your father, and no matter what he did outside, he loved you too. And that's what I think people don't understand, that people that go out and do these things can still love their family.
Yeah, people don't understand that, and I get that, and I don't you know, resent anybody for feeling that. Everybody has their own opinions, and they're entitled to them, and that's okay. But you know, my feelings are my feelings, and I can just live with them and not have to. I just don't deal with the negative anymore.
Right. We have somebody, Gina Marie, in the chat room. She says she'd like to say hi to her girl, Linda.
Hi, Gina. Can she hear me?
She's listening online, so she can hear you.
Okay.
She's just chatting here in the chat room. So she says she'd like to say hi to you, and also she'd like to know what you feel about the situation on Mob Wives with Renee.
With Renee, with what? With her husband?
That's all she said. I don't know. Talk more to Gina.
I'm not really sure exactly what she's talking about. I'm assuming it's the situation with her husband becoming an informant. I'm sorry?
I said maybe so. I'll wait for her to type me some more information. She said yes. That's it. How do you feel about that?
Well, Renee's husband became an informant, and how do I feel about that? I just feel that I don't know what his circumstances were. I don't know what he was in trouble for, and I don't know how much time he was facing or why he did what he did, but people that are facing a lot of time in jail, they sometimes make a decision to work with the government, and I'm no one to judge with that because my father worked with the government too. So I really can't comment on that because I don't know why he did what he did.
Right. And there's so many people nowadays that do work with the government because it's easier. I mean, it's not like the old school, the old days where people went in, did their time, and came home. You know, nowadays, whether you're mafia, mob, or gangster, or street gang, you know, they're going to go in and rat out their friend immediately and take care of themselves.
Right. Well, you know, some of these guys are facing a lot of time. When they're involved in the mafia, they're facing a lot of time. So I don't think they want to spend the rest of their life in jail.
Exactly. And before we talk a little bit more about your dad becoming an informant, tell the audience about your brother and what happened and when he died and how old he was, and tell us that story.
Okay. Well, what happened with my brother is that, and this is what's so crazy, My brother was not a made guy. My brother was just a guy. My brother was just brought into this life because he was born into it. But he wasn't a made guy, so he wasn't in the mafia. He was just the son of a mafia person. And when my father died, he had no more protection in the streets, and he wound up getting into a problem. My brother was involved in dealing, he was involved in some drug dealing, and which is unfortunate because he was a straight A student, and he was so into karate, and he was so intelligent, and he could have done so much more with his life, but because we were sucked into this life terribly, he turned to this life. I don't know why he could, because like I said, he could have done so much more. But this is what he did, and he had no more protection in the streets, and something went wrong with this deal that they had going, and somebody had to take the fall for it, and it was my brother. So the person that killed him was actually my ex-boyfriend's brother. And that's why I say there is no loyalty, because, you know, my ex-boyfriend is my ex-boyfriend. You know, he should have maybe directed his brother to handle this in a different way, but he didn't. So what happened was my brother was told that this situation was going to be squashed, and squashed means in the streets that it's going to be taken care of, and he had nothing to worry about. And my mother told him that when they tell you that, Joey, that means they're going to kill you. It's not squashed. It's not okay. You know, you need to leave because they're going to hurt you. And my brother said, no, they're not. We had a meeting and everything's okay. And what happened was this kid called up my brother. It was the day after St. Joseph's Day. And he told my brother to drive him somewhere. And my brother met him with his friend in the car. And this guy was sitting in the back seat. He told my brother to pull over, and my brother pulled over, and he shot him in the back of the head, and shot him twice, and he tried to attempt to kill my brother's friend, but he ran out of the car and got away, and that's how my brother died. The kid that was in the car with my brother, who was his friend, he got help from my brother right away, and an ambulance came pretty quickly to take him to the hospital, but he died at the hospital.
Wow. And how long ago was that?
That was in 95.
Okay.
1995. And the person that killed my brother, he was missing for 3 years. They couldn't find him. He went hiding for 3 years. And he was also young. He had three or four children that he didn't care about. He basically, you know, he not only did he kill my brother, but he changed his children's lives. You know, they grew up without their father. My brother's daughter grew up without her father. So it goes to show you how these kids just don't care about the repercussions of what they do. They don't care about their families.
Right. So did they finally catch the guy that killed
your
brother?
They caught him. They caught him, and he got 24 years.
Wow.
That's insane. So that's what happened. You know, living without my brother has been very difficult. I still have a hard time till this day believing that he's gone. I couldn't even go to his funeral.
Wow. Must be hard.
I couldn't have that vision. I couldn't see him being put in the dirt. I went when everybody was gone, and after he was buried, my mother wound up in a hospital for 3 months.
Wow.
She had a nervous breakdown, and two more after that. And you know, that's what happened to our family.
So wait, you lost your father and your brother within 10 months, you said?
Yeah, within 10 months.
That's horrible. That's horrible. Wow. So you went on, and did you get married? Or I know that you have some children.
I have a 21-year-old, and I have three more children after that. And you know, life has just it's just been sad. It's just hard now. It's hard. Holidays are hard, and birthdays are hard, and it's just hard going on, period. just very difficult. And, you know, I'm hoping that, well, I know that I will never let my children be involved in anything like this, if I can help it, which I'm
right.
sure I can. And, I'm hoping that I can maybe help other children or teenagers just learn or keep them away from the streets, because really the streets will kill you. The streets are bad, and the people that are in the streets, you know, they're in the streets for a reason, and they want to suck in the good kids. They want to take the kids that are trying to do good in their life, that are maybe doing good in school, because they feel like maybe they're the ones that are a little bit vulnerable, that they can maybe teach them their ways, or I don't know. I just feel like the ones that are bad are trying to pull the good ones into the streets, and that's what I see. I mean, I don't know. That's my opinion.
Right. It's easy to pull the kids into the streets, the ones that may be having some problems at home or maybe having some problems at school or...
It just,
you know,
may
those,
be self-esteem. It may just be a self-esteem
right.
thing.
Somebody
maybe they just feel like they're not, you know, maybe they just don't feel like they're, you know, meeting girls, or they don't have that confidence in themselves, or maybe they're not getting the best grades, and these other kids feel like that they could take advantage of these kids and make them feel powerful and make them feel like, hey, you're cool, you can hang out with us, and, you know, you can have the sexiest girls, and you can, you know, be cool in the streets and have power and make money and have everything nice. In the long run, they're not going to have anything.
Right, exactly. Well, my heart goes out to you, and, you know, I lost my mother. It wasn't to a horrible crime. But still, you know, I miss her dearly, and I can't imagine losing one of my siblings. You know, it's just a very sad thing. And for all of the mothers and friends that we know that have had sons or daughters murdered to senseless gang violence or just violence, you know, it's time for all of us to stand up and stand together and say stop the violence. And, you know, our goal is to educate the youth, and, you know, Linda, keep putting your message out there and your story, and, you know, by sharing to the youth, you know, about your story, maybe, you know, that can bring a little bit of healing to you, you know, a little bit of comfort maybe that you can help somebody else. But definitely I admire you for standing up and standing strong, and for your mother, you know, it's just, you guys have been through a lot, and I, you know, just admire that you're still standing tall through it.
Well, I don't know about standing tall, but I'm still standing.
With that, I'm going to hand the mic over to Rob.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I just want to say, Linda, we appreciate it once again, you coming on the show and spreading your message to help others. But what I want to ask you is that, When you found out really how vicious your father was, and you found out that he had been working with the government, and the government was allowing him to be the vicious man that he was without stopping him, how did that make you and your mother feel when the whole truth unfolded?
Well, I didn't know at first that this person that he was affiliated with in the FBI was fueling him. At first, I just thought that he was working with the FBI because I wasn't very clear on what exactly he was doing with the FBI until a certain point when I realized what this person was doing with my father. I mean, I was really scared. I didn't know how to handle it, and I really couldn't approach my father on that because there was really no talking to him at that point. You know, my father was suffering from AIDS, and he was suffering from the complications of AIDS, which is dementia. And we were having a really hard time communicating with him at that point. So it was really hard for me to deal with, and it was really hard for me to speak to him. It was almost impossible. He was unapproachable, and he was almost not even my father anymore. He was my father in body and not in mind.
Wow. That's a deep one. And I also want you to let the viewers know that your father did not contract AIDS by sexual or none of that right there. I would like for you to let the viewers know how your father attracted AIDS.
What happened was my father needed blood transfusions, and the hospital recommended that he have blood from family and friends. So that's what we did. Family and friends came and donated blood, and one of his crew members came and donated blood. He was a bodybuilder, and he was taking steroids, which was kind of big back in the 80s. And I guess he contracted AIDS from needle sharing, doing steroids. And my father got the AIDS virus from his friend who donated the blood.
Wow. And that's powerful right there, you know. So just to let the viewers know, you don't have to have a sexual encounter with somebody to catch any type of disease, whether it's AIDS, gonorrhea, syphilis, or what have you. You know, if someone else got that and got a blood transfusion, you can also get it that way as well. So we just wanted to clear that up as well, you know. And I just want to ask you too, Linda, when a lot of tragedies start hitting the family, as far as, you know, have y'all house ever got shot up or any of that to that nature when your father was out there in that lifestyle?
Say that again?
I say, have your house or anything ever got shot up when your father was in that lifestyle?
Yeah, my house did get shot at once. And it just so happened that my cousin was supposed to be sleeping over that night. She did sleep over that night, and we had a porch room, you know, had a television. It was like the family room in the front of the house, and we wanted to sleep in that room that night, but my parents didn't let me sleep in that room. They wanted us to sleep in the bedrooms, and that was the night that the house got shot up. It was somebody who was really pissed off at my father and shot up the whole window that night. And if I was sleeping in that room and heard a noise, I probably would have looked up to see what it was and possibly could have gotten shot. So,
wow.
Yeah, my house was shot at once.
And now how afraid of you? You said your children is grown now, right? Your sons?
My son is what?
You say your sons are grown now, correct?
I have one grown son. He's 21. The other one is 11.
Okay, now your grown son, how have you managed to keep him away from the mafia life? Let the viewers know that.
Well, my son, he sees all the pain that we've been through. He was the one that was in the car with me when they tried to kill my father. I mean, he was too young to realize what was happening, but he does know the story, and he has no interest in that life at all. I mean, he goes to college, he's a junior in college, and he gets, you know, really good grades, and he wants to do something with his life, and that also has to do with his father. He does have a really good father, and his father, you know, steers him in the right direction as far as that's concerned. So between me and his father, we just want to make sure that he stays on the right track. And his father's kind of tough on him, so I don't think he's going to let that happen. He's tougher than I am.
Good, good. So that's a good thing right there. Do we got a question? We got a question for you, Linda. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay, the question is from Gina Marie again. She says, I'd like to know if Linda feels that the feds played a role in the death of your father.
I don't think they played a role in the death of my father, because my father was my father was originally put on house arrest, and he violated his house arrest. And what he did was my brother got into a problem in the streets, and my father went and felt the need to protect my brother, and he went out and shot somebody. And when this happened, my brother's friend was shot also, and my brother's friend died 2 days later. So my father was put in jail after that and never came home. So I think that he did that to himself. He had the opportunity to be home under house arrest, and he violated that. So he did that to himself.
Okay, great, great. And another thing, Linda, I would like for you to also let the viewers know, when that incident happened with your brother, you had stated that your mother had definitely took it so hard that she had to, you know, go and get some things together for a few months. Elaborate on that a little bit, how devastating it had hit your mother.
Well, what happened was when my brother got killed, I was living out in New Jersey, and I was 3 hours away from my mother. She was living out in Long Island. So I had gotten the phone call first, and the phone rang, and when I got on the phone, they told me that my brother was killed, and it was like the world stood still, and everything in me just wanted to just fall on the floor. I was screaming. I was freaking out. I mean, I didn't even know how to deal with this phone call, and I didn't know how to deal with it. I can't even explain the feeling that was, getting a phone call that my brother was killed. I couldn't even believe it. It was like somebody killed me. It was a hole in my heart that never even healed. So now my mother's 3 hours away from me, and I didn't want her to get this phone call like I got. It was a cold, heartless phone call, and I didn't want that to happen to her. So I knew that I wasn't going to get to her in time. So what I did was I called my aunt and uncle who live in Brooklyn, and I told them what's going on. They rushed to her. I still didn't call my mother yet, but I called an ambulance. I called the doorman because she lived in a building. I called the doorman. I let him know an ambulance was coming for my mother because I knew she was going to need one. And he let me know when the ambulance got there. When the ambulance got there, I got on the phone with my mother. I waited till they got upstairs. When I heard the knock on the door, I told my mother the news. And I told her that my brother was with my father. I couldn't even say that they killed him. So she said, "What do you mean?" I go, "He's with Daddy." And she says, "What do you mean he's with Daddy?" I go, "Ma, Joey's with Daddy now." And she just cried and screamed, and the ambulance the people had to break down the door, and they took her in the hospital. You know, they took her to the hospital, and it was devastating. I mean, I just couldn't have the cops come to the door and tell her your son was murdered. I didn't want it to be that way, and I was too far away to get to her before them. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Right. So, what advice would you give these young kids out here, Linda, from the life that you, your mother, and your family members had to endure? So much. What advice would you give these youngsters out here that's trying to live the thug gang banging life and the mafia life and things like that, and everybody want to be tough and cool? What advice would you give them?
Well, what I would say to them is that if they stay in that life, they're either going to wind up dead or in jail. And if they wind up dead, their families are going to pay the price for that, and their families are going to pay the price for that forever. So if they care about their families, their mothers, their fathers, their sisters, their brothers, then they should try to turn their life around and maybe do something better with themselves, anything, do anything to get out of it. if you wind up in jail, you're going to suffer. You're going to suffer in a box. Depending on your punishment, depending on where you go, you're going to get abused. You're going to get into fights. You're going to be locked up in a cell. You know, I have a brother who was put in Supermax, and he was locked in a cage 23 hours a day. And I mean a cage, not a regular cell. Now, when he was let out for the 1 hour that he got, he was brought out in a cage that they would put animals in, literally animals, because they don't allow them to have free walking space in Supermax. So you're brought out in cages, and you're not allowed to have any communication with the other inmates. So, I mean, if that's the kind of life you want to live in a cage, then I have no advice for you. But if you don't want that, then you need to do something. Go to a priest, go to a minister, go to a friend. Talk to your parents if you can. Talk to your brother, talk to your sister. Talk to someone. Talk to Rob Boyd and Lucinda. Try to find ways to get out of it. There are ways. As hard as it may seem for you, and you may feel like, you know what, if I try to get out of this, I may get killed. The person that is in charge of me or above me or is the head of the gang, he might kill me if he finds out I want to get out of this. There's always a way for you to get out of it. Just if you're in that kind of a situation and you feel like your life's in danger, you just have to do it in a way where nobody knows. You just have to keep it a secret until you're away from harm's way. But there is always a way. Where there's a will, there's a way, and you will find it. You just have to believe that you're better than that.
Amen, you know. And I just want to say to you, Linda, you know, I did not know that Greg Scarfield Jr. was your brother, but me and my wife got a newsletter that goes out to like 50 different prisons, federal and state prisons. And when your brother was in Colorado prison up there in Super 8, we used to send him our newsletter, you know, but the Supermax would send the letters back, the newsletters we would send to them up there, because there's several other inmates we sent a newsletter to as well. And you are truly correct. They do not let the inmates socialize or speak or talk to each other, because all the letters that we send to the Supermax, they all comes back, you know. But other prisons let the newsletter go in, and your brother was transferred out to Supermax prison. Now he's no longer there, you know.
No, he's not there anymore.
He's in Kansas City.
Right. But see, the thing is that he was in MCC, and what happened was someone said to him, why are you walking with your head up? You should put your head down. Your father's a rat. And Gregory got into a brawl with this guy and hurt him bad. And ever since then, he was put into the hole. He was put into the hole in MCC, and then he was put into the hole in all these other places that he was transferred to. I don't know all the other places he was transferred to, but he was transferred around a few times. And then he wound up going to Colorado ADMAX, which was, I believe, the worst place that he was at. And he was there for a while, and he suffered like a dog. Gregory suffers, I don't know about now, but he suffered like a dog for a long time. He spent a good part of his life in solitary confinement. And that's really what happens to a lot of these people. I mean, I don't know why they would want to live like that. I don't think Gregory ever thought that that was going to happen to him. And I think that if he had the chance to change his life, he would. You know, it's just too late. And you don't want it to be too late. To anyone who is listening, you don't want it to be too late.
So let me ask you this, Linda. Was your brother Greg into the life like your father?
Yes, he was. And he was, and he got into the life in a young age also.
Was he also in the Colombo crime family or another crime family?
No, he was with my father.
And could you tell the viewers what happened that Junior got involved with the life and what took Junior into the prison system where now he's doing life in the prison system? Can you tell the viewers about that?
Well, it all comes down to power, drugs, and money. It all comes down to that. I mean, you know, the mafia was really never involved in drugs for a long time, but, it, you know, the younger generation, they got involved in the drug aspect of it, and that's what happened with Gregory. He got involved in the drugs, and he wound up getting 20 years, and then he wound up getting another, I'm not sure of the exact amount, but I know he got 40 in total. He's not doing life unless they're going to decide to add some more charges on him. But I know he had 40 in total. So.
Right.
And most of that, he spent, most of that time he spent in solitary.
Right. And what was his charge, Linda?
He had RICO charges, drug charges, murder charges. I'm not sure of all of them.
Okay. And you know, when you spoke on that, you know, I went to my paper because I keep my list of all the inmates who we sent our newsletter to, and you know, we followed your brother. And like I said, I'm just not knowing today that Greg Jr. is your brother, you know, and we have been reaching out to a lot of inmates in prison and sending them our newsletter, you know, and, you know, talking to them about educating these kids out here, you know, guys that's doing long stretches that can write into the Streets Don't Love You Back movement, and we can put their story and their message into our newsletter to let these kids know, well, this is what happened. You know what I mean? You live like a cage. You know what I mean? You live in a cage. You don't live in no house. You don't live in no apartment. You live in a cage and you live in a hole in here. You know, this is no life that you're trying to live, because look where I'm at. So definitely, you know, God is always good, you know, and my prayer to all these youths out here that's trying to get into that lifestyle, you better check yourself before you wreck yourself, because you better look at, like these young folks say, you better Google what's happening out here now, because it ain't never been no successful drug dealer, it ain't never been no successful gangster or no successful thoroughbred killer, because in the end, everybody get killed or go to the penitentiary for the rest of their life, or they got some long football numbers to the point where they're going to die in there. So check your stats out here, youngsters, and it ain't like you're going to be running on no football field or no basketball court. You definitely going to be in the cage where none of that jumps off. So evaluate your life out here and pay close attention to Miss Linda's story, because she's done been around that life. And that life didn't bring nothing but grief, heartache, and pain to her and her mother and the rest of her family. So, you know, check your stats out here before you want to be a thug.
That's right.
I wanted to ask you, Linda, your father had, I guess, two sets of families, two sets of kids, and Gregory was your brother from the other family. You have other siblings as well, don't you?
Yeah, they were from the other family.
Right.
It was just me and my brother from the side.
Right. So how are your other siblings, and do you have a relationship with them?
No, I don't. I don't have a relationship with any of them.
Okay.
No. I did for a while, but once my father died and my brother died, you know, I just felt like I don't know. It's just things went bad. The family fell apart. Everything fell apart.
Were the others involved in the crime family, or did they decide not to?
No, not really.
Okay.
No, it was just Gregory and my brother, but my brother wasn't, you know, he wasn't a maid guy.
Right. Right. Well, the rest of them, it's got to be devastating for them, too, to lose, you know, two brothers and a father. And, I mean, they lost Gregory, actually, to the prison system, but gone for a long time. And
Yeah, I don't really know how they feel. Our family fell apart, and I don't really speak for them or about them because
right.
we have our differences. But and that's what happens. The families just break apart, and it's sad.
Very sad.
I just really speak about my brother, and you know, Gregory. When he was home, I was young. I seen him a few times in prison. But the, you know, the last time I seen him out in the streets was, I think I was around 16, 17.
Was he
and,
older than you?
I'm sorry?
Was he older than you?
Oh, yeah, he's older than me. And, you know, he's a street guy, and he was a maid guy and all that, and he committed murders. But, you know, before I knew all that about him, he had the greatest personality, fun, loving, caring. It's crazy. You would never think that they were capable of this stuff, but they are.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, a lot of people need to be careful, you know, who they're out hanging around with, because you just never know, you know, they could be nice one minute and then turn on you the next, you know, out here when you're living that kind of a life and doing the wrong thing.
No, you never know, and I know firsthand because I've seen friends of my father's who I cared very deeply for just disappear. And, you know, when I asked my father, Dad, where's so-and-so? Oh, he's not around anymore. Why? You know, and I didn't know the answer to it until I was a little older, but they got killed because they did something wrong. And these were my father's friends. So
yeah, a tough life to grow up in.
The bottom line is, it doesn't matter. They're your friend. It could be a right hand guy. If he does something you don't like, they're gonna kill you.
And that's correct, right there, Miss Linda. And I also want you to speak on Linda. You're going to write your autobiography here soon. So would you like to elaborate on that? Because you know, definitely would like people to hear the whole story, and at the end of your story is definitely what you're saying on here. You know, the streets definitely don't love you back, and it's death or the penitentiary, you know. So would you elaborate on that little taste for the viewers?
Well, I'm in the middle of writing a book right now about my life as Greg's daughter and the life that I lived with him. And, you know, it's not a pretty story. It's gonna really be an eye opener for what the mob is really about and what the mob does to families and what it does to the children and how the mob destroyed everything that I love. And you know, that's basically the gist of my book. It is going to be about, it took away everything that I cared about in my life. And I'm gonna talk about that in the book, and hopefully people that read it will understand that the mob is not something that is glorified, or you know, it's not something that you should be proud of or show off. It's not a nice thing. It's not good to be in the mob. It's not something that I'm proud to say that I was a part of. I didn't ask to be in it. I was born into it.
Right, right. And I also want to say, Linda, before I pass the mic to my missus, you know, a prime example to what the mob life and what that game is about. You know, John Gotti was a guy that was a boss. But at the end of the game, John Gotti could not escape the government, because I want to tell y'all people one thing. The government owns all the prisons in America and outside of America. When they're tired of you, and listen to me, when they're tired of you, they don't care who you is. They hold the key to the gate, and they definitely going to get you off the street and going to put you in their cage. And that's where John Gotti spent the rest of his life at, in the prison system, you know? And if
yeah.
he was still living today, you know what I mean, at the age he would be now, he would definitely tell you, too, that the streets don't love you back. Because look what it done for me. So education is the key to any type of success, and education is the key to staying away from all this gang violence, all this mafia thing, and anything got to do with hurting somebody. You know what I mean? Because the government is nothing to play with. They will get their man, and they have done proved that many times over.
Yeah, and if you get sick there, they don't care. That's it. You're gonna die there. Their medical assistance is not gonna take care of you.
No, they're not rushing to send you to the. They're not rushing to take you nowhere. You can believe that.
Right.
Right, and that's, you know, there's so many inmates that are getting older now, and when they had the big prison boom, you know, most of them are baby boomers, and they're all getting older. And, you know, how are they going to take care of them in there? What are they going to do? You know, and if they let them go, how are they going to survive out here? You know, it's definitely a business. And as somebody commented in the chat room, prisons are a business. And they're out here to make money. There's big, you know, big corporate companies that have stock in it. And, you know, that's a whole other show. But I had another question, too, as far as the FBI or the CIA. To me, and this is my personal opinion, they're just like the mafia or mobsters or gangsters, because they control the drugs that come in and out of the country, and they control, like your father, people, and they destroy people's lives as well. When they get them to become informants, they're allowing them to hurt people, to continue that life, or they bring people in and show them how to do these things, and then later turn on them.
I don't agree with that whole system at all. I don't agree with that system at all. I believe that if somebody commits a crime, then they should pay the price for that crime. I don't believe that somebody, because they have information on someone else, should get away with committing 15 murders and then be able to live a normal life just because they're going to be able to put someone else away. I don't agree with it, but,
right.
You know, I'm not...
They use and abuse people more than anybody because they have that power and control as a government entity to use people and abuse people like they did your father. They brought him in because he was a killer. They had him, you know, do their business, take care of their dirty work, and paid him.
Yeah.
And they do that to a lot of people. They've done that to a lot of people, and that's not.
And when they made when they got him to do something they wanted him to do, when my father found the bodies in Mississippi, they never gave him the credit for it.
Right.
I don't know if you know that.
They took the credit.
Yeah, they took the credit for that, but they never gave it to him. You know, he risked his life to do that. You know, I'm not saying that he's a hero, but you know, he did find those bodies that they were looking for.
And for those listeners that don't know what we're talking about, can you kind of just tell that story?
Well, you know, Mississippi Burning. That's a movie that was out about this story. The three civil rights workers that were missing, Hoover couldn't find the bodies, and there was a lot of pressure on Hoover to find these bodies, and he couldn't get the job done. And they called my father to find the bodies and help out the FBI, and my father found them.
Right.
And
he used his force or his whatever to get the.
Yeah, he used his force. He used his street ways, which they weren't allowed to do. You know?
Definitely. Well, your book will be very interesting, very good reading, and I'm glad you're doing that. I'm glad you're writing that, and gosh, just take your time and make sure you get everything in there, you know. It's an awesome story. I mean, it's not a happy story, but it's a story that definitely needs to be told, and it can definitely help other people.
It's a hard story to tell. It's very hard for me, but...
It's got to be a hard story to write, for sure.
Yeah. Sometimes when I'm speaking to the writer, I start to shake. I have like a nervous reaction when I'm speaking about this stuff. But
it's hard. I mean, you're reliving everything is what you're doing, and it's really hard to go through all those memories of, you know, maybe happy, sad, hurt, grief. I mean, there's so many different things that you're going to be going through as you do it, and it's just, I mean, you're reliving it over and over.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's a lot of people that give negative comments, and they don't understand that I'm doing this for, you know, I'm doing this because I need to do this, not only for myself, but because I want people to have the perspective of, I want people to have my perspective, because I want to tell the truth about how it was growing up, being the daughter of such a person being called the Grim Reaper. I want to tell that story, because if I can grab 5 people's attention, 10 people's attention, kids that are out in the streets, and say, wow, I don't want to wind up like that. I don't want to wind up dead. I don't want to wind up with 2 bullets in my head. I don't want my mother to cry every day. I don't want my sister to be, you know, thinking about me every day and, you know, and not be able to go on with her life. If I could get that, then it was worth it. You know, I'm not looking to make a ton of money off this book. I'm looking to make a point.
Right. And that point needs to be made. And there's too many people out here that need to be saved and need to know the truth. You know, there's just so much going on out here in the world that is nonsense, you know, with the violence and the killings and the racism and the, you know, just all the different things that are going on out here, you know, and people could live happier lives if they just did things a little differently, I guess.
Well, like I said, I think a lot of the problems is that these kids somehow get lost. I think they get lost because maybe they're not doing well in school, and maybe they have some problems with learning, or they feel inadequate, and they feel that the streets and these people in the streets make them feel like they are, you know, more powerful. I think that's where it stems.
It definitely does.
Because if you're not doing well in school, and you're in the streets, and these guys are saying, you know, you could do this and you could do that, and you're going to be great. You're a tough guy, you know. Oh, look at this girl, she likes you. You know, you're going to get that self-esteem that you're looking for out in the streets, and that's where they're going to go.
Right.
You know.
Definitely.
Unfortunately, yeah. Some kids get lost in the education system because there's not enough maybe help in the schools to realize that these kids may need extra help. And
right.
I think those are the ones that get lost.
And then some of the kids that are, you know, too ahead or need to learn differently, they're not given that attention and they drop out of school. They're smart kids, you know, just like a lot of the gangsters and the kids in the street. They're smart kids, you know. They know how to count money. They know how to do math. They're out there selling drugs, you know.
Right.
They're smart kids. They just got lost in the system somehow.
Right.
Definitely. Well, people have commented here in the chat room that they're looking forward to getting your book, so you do have some support out here, and people looking forward to reading that. So we did have a caller, but it dropped, so I don't know if they're just listening in or maybe they'll call back. But I'm going to hand the mic back over to Rob for a minute.
Okay.
Well, I just want to say, Linda, we really appreciate you coming on and spreading your message, and do you have any last words you would like to tell the viewers before we close out the show tonight?
I just want to thank everyone who's listening for listening, and you know, I'll always be happy to be on the show if you ever want me to be on it again. You know, I would like to get my message across to people if I can, And, you know, I was a little nervous tonight because I've never done a radio show before, but, you know, I just would really like to be able to maybe help if I can. I don't want anybody to have to suffer the life that this family suffered or other families suffered, you know, because of my father.
Well, that sounds like a winner, and we definitely, once again, we're honored and happy to have you on the show, and we're definitely honored to, you know, be one of the first radio shows you done been on, Dan. So we're very blessed to have you on the show and to spread your message to help these youths out here, and we're looking forward to continuously working with you as well and educating these kids out here. So we're definitely looking forward to, you know, study working with you and what you're trying to do and the point you setting out to continuously to make, that the mob life is not what's happening, is not cool, ain't no status about saying I'm a made man, cop, old boss, because at the end of the day, you can get killed too, bro. So don't think you're in a slot where ain't nothing going to happen to you. Like Miss Linda said, that's just a name, but they can take that right away in 1 second, you know?
So yep.
Them titles don't mean nothing, bro. That's just like saying I'm the CEO of Sears and Roebuck, but if you don't own Sears and Roebuck, the man who actually owns it, he can replace you. You just got a title.
Well, I could be the boss, but if you want to be the boss and you got the gun and I don't know it's coming, you can kill me, and now guess what? I'm dead and you're the boss.
Amen, Linda. So we appreciate that. And, you know, do you have the title of your book yet, Linda, that you can tell the people? Are you still working on the title?
Well, we have a working title, but I'm not really able to speak about that yet. Not at this point.
Okay,
great. It's not a definite.
So what we're going to do, Linda, we're going to have you back on the show when the book is finna come out. We're going to have you on the show, and we'll definitely be promoting whatever you're doing to help these youths and others out here. And when that book is done and it's getting ready for release, we're definitely going to have you back on the show and start promoting it as well. So we appreciate you, and any last words you would like to say?
No, just thank you, Rob and Lucinda. Thank you.
Okay, and I'm going to pass the mic over to the missus, and we'll close it out, and we thank all the fans for tuning in tonight. Here go the missus.
Okay, well, we do have one caller here that called in at the last minute. We're going to go ahead and bring them on and see if they have a comment or a question.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the air?
Yes.
Hello?
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 You're on the air. Do you have a question or a comment for Linda?
Yes. How did you get through this? It just seems like a really, really tough life.
I couldn't really hear.
How did you get...
How did I what? Hello?
She must have muted her phone or something. I still have her on, but she's not. Call her if you're there. Check your phone. Okay. Somehow her call got dropped. We can see if she calls back in here real quick. Yeah, I couldn't understand her either.
Yeah, it was hard to hear.
Very hard. So, well, we're going to go ahead and give you our website. And our website is www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com, or just Google The Streets Don't Love You Back and you'll find our website and our radio show and all that we do. We do go out and speak to the youth, different high schools and youth groups and different places. So if you want to bring us to your city, get with us, let us know, and we can try to arrange that. We have our radio show every Wednesday night, and please join us every Wednesday night. We have great guests every week. Our caller is back, so let me try to connect them one more time. Caller, we have you back. Can you try to speak a little more clear and go ahead and ask the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just wondering, how did you get through, like, your life without breaking? I wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, it was not easy, and I actually had a very hard time dealing with a lot of different episodes of my life. I did break a few times. I mean, not literally have a breakdown, but, you know, I do struggle. I still struggle today. There's days where I can't get out of bed, but, you know, I try, and that's basically it. I mean, it's difficult, and I live with the pain still today. It doesn't go away. It's just a matter of trying to learn how to live with it rather than let it take you over.
I'm trying not
to let that happen because I have beautiful children that deserve to have a beautiful life. And I guess they're the reason that, you know, I had to keep going and want to give them a good life.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. But at least you're pulling through. That's good.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, caller, for calling in.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah. Before we close, that was a good comment that she made. And have you been able to? What's helped you the most to get through it, Linda? Have you gone to counseling, or do you have a support group? Or is it just that you know your kids need you? What is the most thing that is your driving force?
It's basically my kids. My kids are really my only force. Without them, okay. I don't know where I would be. But, you know, they're beautiful, and I was blessed. I have two boys and two girls, and, you know, they didn't ask to be here either, and they deserve to have a good life, and I owe it to them. So, you know, I have to keep going for them, and I have to make sure that I stay strong for them, even when I'm at my weakest, and sometimes it's hard.
Definitely. Well, I'm sure that you're a great mother and a great role model, and I know that they're, you know, looking up to you and. You know, it's just hard to imagine because I know losing people anyway, you can, I mean, just go through this great, great depression. And, you know, just thank God sometimes for kids because they do, you know, pull people out of the lowest places and make them strong because they know, you know, that they have to be for somebody else. You know,
yeah, well,
what's
so ironic is that, you know, although I was protected, you know, almost my whole life, well, not my whole life, but while my father was alive, when he was gone and I had gotten divorced from my husband, I waited 10 years later, my sons are 10 years apart, I wound up becoming a victim of domestic violence and, after 35 arrests, I finally put an end to that. And, you know, not only did I have to deal with the pain of everything that I had to deal with the loss of my father and my brother and dealing with all the scars that I have from that life, I also became a victim of domestic violence, and it was very traumatic. And, you know, my kids had to endure that also. So, you know, I do owe it to them to give them a better life.
Wow, that's heavy, Linda. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, maybe we can do a show on that another night. I can speak to some women about how to get out of a domestic violence relationship.
Definitely, because we're big advocates for domestic violence and we just put Rob's book out last year called Never Hit a Woman, and that's about domestic violence. So that is one of our priorities is educating women on how to stay away from those kind of relationships, men and women, because it can happen to either or.
But the reason why I brought that up is just the twist in my life of how I became, how I was so protected and how I became so unprotected, both me and my brother. I mean, I didn't pay with my life like my brother did, but I became a victim of domestic violence and was beaten, and, you know, it was terrible. You know, we both, I can't compare my situation to my brother, but just the twists in our life were just so traumatic and so dramatic, just full circle.
Well, domestic violence, I mean, is one of the most horrible things any woman can go through. You know, it's, and I don't have to tell you, but it's hard. And to come out of that as well, I mean, you have to be a strong person to be able to get away from that. And so, you know, we're really proud of you for doing that. And we'll definitely have to bring you on the show again for that when we do a show about domestic violence. I'm going to pass the mic over to Rob real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to also say tonight we would just like to let everybody know that our fighter who we're sponsoring and backing, Mr. Jesse DeRazor Reese, he will be fighting this Saturday here in Phoenix, Arizona at the Celebrity Theater at 7 p.m. And he's going to go in and handle his business and do a great job. So Jesse also came out with us April 4th, and we spoke to 300 youths right here at Maricopa High School here in Maricopa. So we just want to thank the youths there at the Maricopa High School for allowing us to come in and educate them. And then out of the 300 kids that was there, 30 of them joined the Streets Don't Love You Back movement, and they are down with the movement and also at a young age helping give back to the youth and others. So we want to just give a shout-out to the Streets Don't Love You Back members right there at the Maricopa High School right here in our community. And we also want to say go and get educated with the new book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, that's out in the Never Hit a Woman. Also, Miss Linda, we got another caller. The call is coming in now, so we're going to go to this caller. Hold on.
Okay.
Caller, you on the air.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hey, how you feeling, Chief? Welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show.
Oh, yeah, it's cool. Now, I don't have a question. I actually grew up three blocks away from Linda back in the neighborhood in Brooklyn. I knew her brother, Joe. And,
my man.
It was a pretty crazy place to be back then. And I just wanted to say she's been through a lot in her life. And, you know, I just wanted to call and give a shout-out to her. And I was listening to the show. I think you guys are doing a great job.
Thanks,
hey,
Joe.
We appreciate it, Joe. And when you get time, Joe, go log on to our website at thestreetsdontloveyoubackneen.com and join the website and keep up with what we're doing and receive our emails and stay updated at what the movement is doing to educate these kids out here. And we appreciate you listening in tonight.
Yeah, no doubt. I was listening to it, and, you know, it brought back some memories because I know back then it was just a pretty crazy time. I grew up in that same area, and a lot of my friends were either involved with the life, and I was always on the outskirts, and I knew a lot of people. And, you know, it's not a good thing, and, you know, it's a jungle out there. So for the young people out there, just try and stay on the straight and narrow.
My man, you know, if you don't mind, Joe, I would just like to ask you a question right quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you tell these youths out here that's, like I'd ask Miss Linda, that's out here trying to be a thug or call themselves, you know, a gangbanger and want to be a mafia man and all of that, tell them what happens to that life when you want to be all of that?
You know, you're basically on borrowed time. You know, it's good for a little while. It looks like you have a little glitz and glamour, but you know, the hourglass, you know, the time of sand always runs out eventually. So you're either going to get caught up, you know, in the crossfire, you're going to wind up getting in trouble. And, you know, I had a lot of friends in that life, and, you know, and, you know, I seen people go away. I seen, you know, a lot of bad stuff growing up in that area, too, when we were growing up as kids. And, you know, it was pretty nuts, you know.
We appreciate that, D'Angelo, you know. And like I say, keep dating up with us and, you know, keep spreading your message as well, brother, because I see that you want to keep them educated and keep them on the sharp.
No doubt, definitely. I think you guys are doing a great job. But, all right, take care. And, Linda, take care.
I know.
Hey, you take care. Thanks for calling in.
You got it.
Yeah, Miss Linda. So, yeah, we definitely appreciate everything that you're doing. And we want you to continue doing your work. And we right here for you. The Streets Don't Love You Back is right here for you. And we're going to keep spreading your message with you. And you just be safe. And God bless you and your mother and your family and all of that good stuff, you know?
And God bless you, too. You guys are awesome. My mother loves you guys.
We appreciate it.
Give your mother our love.
We send the love right back. Cause, you know, tell your moms, you know, she definitely... be on top of the Facebook thing, whether she share a lot of our stuff. And I just want to commend your mother right here on the air, because it's because of your mother that I got in touch with you to be a guest on the show after I'd seen your mother putting up information about your brother, and I seen that she had lost a child. And that's when I asked her to be a guest on the show. And she said, no. She said, but my daughter would be a great guest to be on your show. So we want to just give a big shout out to moms, you know?
Yeah. She's heavily into the Parents of Murdered Children. Like I said, she spends the day on there every day. She's on there for a good 8 hours. It's like a day's work. Not that it's work, but... You know what I'm saying? She's on there from the minute she wakes up till the time she's ready to go to bed.
That's a good lady then, because she's definitely don't have to be on the foot soles of tip, but the internet is the greatest thing ever put on the planet, because you ain't got to be in you know, South Afghanistan to talk to somebody or spread the message to somebody. So we commend your mother for being the woman that she are, and the courageous woman for, you know, getting up and, you know, not just being down and somebody knocking her down and she didn't get back up. She got back up fighting and running and helping other people at the same time, you know, as well as helping herself, you know, heal through the years and coming down. So we definitely appreciate all the things she do from the computer.
Well, thank you.
All right, Miss Linda. So we're about to close out. Is anything you would like to say before we close out?
No, just thank you very much, and thank you to the listeners, and tune in to Rob and Lucinda every Wednesday, because they're great people and they have a lot of good advice to give.
We appreciate that, and you send our love to your kids and everybody as well. And we're just going to go out tonight. Any last announcements, hon?
No, I don't have any announcements other than just make sure you check out our website and check out our radio shows every Wednesday night. And we just want to give a special shout out to all the families of murdered victims. And, you know, we just want to hold them up in prayer and give you peace and comfort and help you to, you know, never forget that you get through it. And what'd you say? Something else?
About our clothes.
We do have our clothes line that just recently came out. So, you know, get on the website and check that out as well. And just again, Linda, thank you so much for coming on. You've been very courageous in telling your story. And we know it hasn't been easy, but we commend you for being the person that you are, for moving forward. And we wish you great success with writing your book, and you know, we'll be thinking about you, and you know, just get through that and get it done, and you'll be able to reach out and help so many people.
Thank you.
Just let us know when you're getting ready to get it out there, so we can get you back on the show and promote it for you.
Yeah, I definitely will. And to all those kids out there, if anyone's listening, all the kids listening, get off the streets. And when you're in bed tonight, just say a prayer that you're in bed and change your life before it changes on you.
Right. Before it's too late.
Before it's too late.
That's right. Okay, we are going to go out tonight with a song. This is a new, brand new artist out of Detroit, Michigan, with the Grand Slam Records. And this is Kendall Day, and it's his first new single that just came out a couple weeks ago, and it is called All For You. We wish you a great night, a great week, and we will meet you back here next Wednesday night. Remember, the streets don't love you back.
Everything is all for you.
Everything is all for you.